everyone, and welcome to Book Solid. We're your host. I'm India.
And I'm Soraya.
And today we're going to be covering The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. Spoiler alert. Hey guys, just as a heads up, we will be revealing spoilers in this episode. If you haven't yet read the book or seen the show or film, this is a courteous reminder to proceed with caution.
So, jumping right in, what were your initial thoughts with The Midnight Library?
Yes, so you mentioned this earlier before we started recording, but basically, and this has come up actually with a couple of our episodes, I've noticed just like throughout the times, but like with this book in particular, there was a major disconnect for me between what I thought it was and what it actually was.
I feel like that's been the theme of this season of our podcast.
Like, and it's tough because truthfully, like I went in with it and I didn't have much like preconceived notions. I was just, at the time I was working at a bookstore and this book was very, you know, hopping off the shelves, hot seller. So I picked it up and I just solely went based off of the book flap. And so I'm like, okay, you know, this is some kind of maybe possibly in the sci-fi realm genre book. It deals with a character who, you know, I believe, like, I forget the exact language that was used, but she's going through something and mm-hmm. then she's trying to like make amends kind of thing. But in actuality, we learned that the main character, Nora, has situational depression. And so for me, I just, and we've talked about this before, but I just wish that like books and maybe publications going forward can move towards like including some type of trigger warning, because in Nora's case in particular, it was very harrowing. Like the things that she was going through was very heavy, and it's like immediately those first few chapters. Mm-hmm. She's also dealing with suicide as well, and so I didn't know like that's what this book was incorporated or included, and so. Yeah, it's just like checking in to make sure that the readers are in the right headspace to like receive that at that time. You know, I wish that would have happened.
No, I completely agree. I saw the flap. Yeah, like when we decided to do this episode together, mm-hmm. I'm like, this seems interesting. And just going off of that, I figured it was going to be pretty light, and not in terms of like the read itself, but just the material mm-hmm. of. And I'm fascinated by this concept of, you know, choices you did or didn't make, you yeah. know, how any seemingly insignificant decision can completely alter the course of your life. Like mm-hmm. if you make a right instead of a left onto your yes. street, or, you know, like something I always think about was, when I moved into the dorms in college, I was accidentally late with getting my deposit. And so I got automatically assigned to a dorm room instead of choosing the one I wanted to be in. But mm-hmm. being there, I met you, I met my boyfriend, I met my best friend, like who was my roommate. Like mm-hmm. it's all these things that happened because I did that. Yeah. And had I, you know, been on time and chosen the right one, maybe you guys wouldn't be in my life. So it's just like mm-hmm. all these little things that, you know, make our lives out there. I'm fascinated by what would happen if I did this differently and that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I thought we were getting here. And we did to a degree, but mm-hmm. It was a lot heavier than I was anticipating. Like,
yeah.
And straight from the beginning, I was like, right. whoa, I didn't know that's the read that we were getting into today.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, you know, in general, I liked this book. It was just like, it was a treat, like the writing style, Matt Haig taking us through all these dimensions and like, just the creative chops. I was really impressed. Like there's a point, I think after like her ninth life or eighth life that she's gone into, where it's this page of just like rapid fire, bam,
yeah,
bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, wow, that is so impressive. Just like, she's a psychologist and actually she's a artist and actually she's a mom. Actually she has no kids. Like just the, yeah, it was a flex.
There was a lot of material. Yeah. Because yeah, with a concept like this, there's a lot to get.
Yeah.
Through.
Yeah, and so I don't know, it was exciting. I definitely, and this could be grounds for our Discord, definitely you guys should check that out if you haven't already.
Yes, talk to us, please.
Yeah, but I don't know, you know how I am, and mm-hmm. as I'm reading this, all these media references were coming to mind. I'm always trying to like create a map in my head or a world or like, yeah, world building. And so one of the things I noticed in the, while the beginning chapters were pretty heavy, there was this really interesting thing going on with like the writing style itself is really like witty and sharp. Like I liked the characters' little, it was just interesting. Like, she's just going through her life. There's the neighbor here, and then the brother's best friend, and then she works at this record store, and I think it was a record store. And I thought of the show High Fidelity on Hulu, Zoe Kravitz. I won't spoil it or anything, but it was like a similar vibe there. And yeah, I was just recalling, of course, Back to the Future. I was going to say Back in the Future. Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. Classic, classic.
Yeah. But what you were saying just now, I just realized when I was a kid, I used to have this reoccurring, it was a dream, I reckon. I think it was a nightmare, but I still kind of am. Like, this idea of my parents when they were my age. And I used to have this dream where, like, I'm pretty sure I was watching Back to the Future, but, like, I would get stuck in the past when they were kids, and we were the same age. I was the same age as my parents. And, like, I would go up to them, and I'd be like, Dad, Mom, and then they'd be like,
who are you?
Yeah, weird little kid, we're the same age, I'm not your dad. And it used to, like, break my heart, because I'm like, no, like, I'm trapped, I need to get back, like, you're actually my parents. And so, just, yeah, because I know in this book it also dabbles into, like, philosophy and quantum physics, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. I really like the philosophy aspect of it, which is funny because I never took myself to be someone, like, particularly interested in philosophy, but maybe I am after reading this.
I know.
Like, a lot of the things she was referencing and talking about, I'm like, that's very interesting, or like, like, mm-hmm. It was just, you know, posing a lot of interesting questions, and that's the point of philosophy, to think a little bit more deeply about things. But yeah, I enjoyed that aspect of it a lot. And in us talking about the content, I was reading some articles, and I know that Matt Haig himself struggled with anxiety and depression. And so, like, I think that was part of his inspiration for this book. I can't remember if it was his first book. No, I don't think it was, but one of his other bestsellers, I think it's called Reasons to Live, Reasons to Stay Alive. And so in the article, he was talking about how he wants to kind of just, like, open the door to more conversations surrounding mental health.
Absolutely.
And so, and I do, like, while the content of the book is heavy, there were parts of it where I appreciated what he was trying to do in, like, showing us how Nora's perspective changed, or just, like, showing her kind of maneuvering through her depression.
Right.
I think that was handled really well in certain parts. I guess I was just going back to our point of maybe why he chose to write this material.
Yeah, I kind of want to echo that. I think, you know, we do have to have these conversations, and by no means am I don't want it to come across like we shouldn't be, because yeah, I agree, like, definitely talking about mental health. This has come up in our One of Us is Lying episode and our Words on Bathroom Walls episode from last season. Like, we definitely need these stories. We need that representation. We need to, like, normalize these discussions. So I think, and I feel like it was handled rather well. Aside from, like, not having, you know,
it's just about knowing what you're getting into.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he did portray it too with, like, an authenticity and, like, a rawness. When I found out after that he had gone through some of these things himself, I was like, oh wow, I can really, like, it makes sense. I can feel that and see that, like, through his writing. And so that was a lot, like, a lot of that touched on me emotionally, just because I could feel her emotion so strongly, and it made me feel emotional with her. I mean, and that's the mark of great writing, if something can make you feel that way. So I definitely, like, my heart hurt for her a lot.
That's true. And as you say that, I'm recalling there was, it kind of makes sense, like, he's pulling from his personal experience, because, like, there's circumstances that Nora finds herself in that are very specific. And yeah, it kind of makes you think, or, like, you know, what did he experience similar dynamics in his life with, like, there's a heavy emphasis, and we'll probably talk about this later, but, like, on familial relationships, so, like, the relationship with her brother and her parents, and it's very, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Like, him pulling from his personal experiences.
Yeah. Let's, I guess we'll just kind of move on into the first scenario she finds herself in, or just Nora herself. Like, it's really interesting to me, and I feel like the major theme of this book was we get so caught up as people and, like, I should have done this and I should have done that. And to me, this book was very, like, be careful what you wish for, and the grass isn't always greener. Like, those are the two, like, kind of, like, cliche thoughts that kept coming into my mind, because she was convinced that she would be happier if she hadn't given up swimming and made it to the Olympics, or if she had joined the band or stayed in the band with her brother, or if
the pub.
Yeah, she'd started the pub and with her ex-boyfriend and married him, and she got to see, like, nope. Like, you know, like, it's just, like, you never know. Like, you think you may want something, and so then you spend your whole life, like, I regret that I didn't do that, or I should have, could have, would have. But then, in that life that you got that thing, it wasn't what you wanted, and it kind of was just, I feel like the moral of the story is, like, which might sound corny, but that life is what you make it.
Yeah.
And...
Sorry, the Hannah Montana. Not That's me so singing funny. On the podcast. Oh, so I was about to break on song.
I didn't even think about that. Wow. Okay, yeah, but for real, like, I know it's so corny, but like, it's true, and I just feel like that's the point he was trying to make, and like, shift your perspective, essentially.
That, okay, as you said that, I just have to say, I'm gonna stop, I promise, but I just thought of, I know you watched Black Mirror.
Yes.
Okay, so Black Mirror. Giving Black Mirror energy, and also the OG, the Twilight Zone. I used to love the Twilight Zone, but that idea of just like, yeah, be careful what you ask for, because I felt like in both those shows that was like the core of a lot of the things characters found themselves in, situations they thought they wanted one thing and they got that thing, and it was like, this is actually terrible.
Or what's that movie, Bedazzled? No, is it Bedazzled? I think that's what it's called, with Elizabeth Hurley. Have you seen it?
Oh,
I think it's called Bedazzled. Now I'm blanking, but it's basically the same thing where and Brandon Fraser, I think. I watched this in middle school, so don't hold it against me if that's not the title. But I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. And so basically she like appears and gives him, I can't remember, three wishes or three things he can change, but he's not ever specific enough. So he'll be like, I wish I was, you know, like a famous whatever. And so he gets that life, but then there's something wrong with it. Like, it's basically like a trickery of, you know, this, but the point we're making of it's not, things are not what you think they are, or what you think you want may not actually be what you want. Long-winded way.
Kind of like Aladdin with like, with the genie, like, okay, so you wished for this, but you didn't specify.
Exactly. It just reminded me of that. Man, me and my friend in like sixth grade, we used to watch that all the time. That's a throwback.
Bedazzled. I don't know why. Maybe I've seen it.
I'm going to look it up really quick. I could have promised it was called Bedazzled, but watch me be completely wrong. Yeah. It's Bedazzled. Came out in 2000.
Okay, I don't know that I know that one, but yes, with Nora and just those first few timelines, Nora's a fascinating character, you know, and I felt like she was written really well. There's a lot of nuance to her, there's a lot of things I could relate. Yeah, this book is good because she has this kind of full circle moment at the end, not to like skip to the end too much, but she just kind of like realizes over the course of the book that she, because it sounds like a cliche.
It does, but you're right. It's just, like, the only thing that's changed from Nora in the beginning and Nora at the end is her perspective.
Exactly.
She's still going through the same difficulties, but she's realized that she wants to live.
Exactly.
And that this right now isn't permanent. Like, she's kind of invigorated with the sense of, I want to see my potential. I want to see what I can be instead of what I... only focusing on what I am now, basically.
Or focusing on a positive outcome. Because, like, she was really, you know, like, okay, if I have this life
specific
and the husband,
outcomes,
And it's like, okay, but you get this. And then that, we were talking about that, like, ripple timeline effect. So now you have the perfect husband. Well, you know, your brother's dead in this timeline.
Exactly.
Or, like, something just really drastic. And you're just like...
Or this kid, she used to tutor. He's now, you know, constantly in and out of jail because she wasn't that positive influence in his life. Like, any little thing.
Yes. And so... yeah, that's literally the brilliance of this book, because I'm someone who's become, I guess you could say, kind of numb to cliches, and they just, they're, you know, they're just phrases.
For a reason, you know?
Yeah, the phrases you put on your, like, I don't know, wall art, pillows.
Bumper stickers.
Yeah. But I feel like this book just, it really got to me, because it's so true. Like, literally what you said, the beginning, it's a loop, you know? The beginning is the end, but what has changed? Her perspective. And she realizes, like, her life, there was a lot, she realizes that she had a really good support team around her already. And so she really leans into that. And I guess while we're talking about it, I can just say this. There was a point for me towards the very, very end. So she has that moment where she gets into, like, she realizes as things are kind of like, things were getting intense in the Midnight Library. It's crumbling, very much about to break down. And she's like, she thinks about her neighbor, Ash, who, from what we understand, he like kind of has a crush on her, asked her out on a date. He's a doctor, but he's also just a friend. Like, he's someone who's present in her life, has helped her. And so she's in this timeline where she marries him and has a daughter named Molly and a dog named Plato. She's living her best life. It's amazing. And she gets pulled out of it. And so at that point, she asks Mrs. Elm, she's like, this is the life that I want. Take me back, kind of thing. And I was really hoping that what wasn't going to happen was, and you've actually talked about this before, but books and stories and their tendency to rely on like a romantic plot to kind of like wrap things up in a bow, because I was like, okay, Ash, like, this is cute and I like this for her, but it is left field and I don't think her romantic life is the main focus of like what she's going on or what's going on with her depression. And so what was really nice is at the ending, it wasn't that at all, right? Like, she realizes, you know, Mr. Bancroft,
Banerjee,
yeah, her neighbor, yeah. Her neighbor, you know, her brother, just everyone in her life, even Mrs. Elm herself, she realizes that's love for her, that's life for her. And so I was really glad it wasn't just Ash.
Yeah, you know? And like, her staying in that world, she never would have resolved her own things that she had going on. She never would have kind of confronted her depression in the way that she did. She never would have kind of confronted herself over her perspective on life. You know, it would have been like, wrap this up in a pretty bow. And this is not a pretty bow kind of story. Exactly. This is like a story of growth and pain and struggle. And yeah, and that's the thing too, is like, when she gets to the Midnight Library and Mrs. Elm tells her, you know, if you find a life that you know that you will never be happier in, then you get to stay. And I kind of hated that idea because, and especially even when she got to the one at the end with Ash and Molly, it did seem like a very nice life. But I'm like, to me, I felt like she was never going to truly be happy anywhere because it wasn't her life, which is the point she ended up coming to, which I love to see.
Yeah.
Because, like, say she did stay in that world with Ash and Molly, you missed your wedding, you missed you and your husband dating, him proposing, the getting pregnant, being pregnant, the birth of your child, the first 4 or 5 years of her life. Like, you can't just settle into that because you're missing so much, you know? And, like, you can never get that back. And so it wouldn't have felt right. Like, so to me, when Miss Elm first told her that, I was like, I don't think she's ever going to be happy because it's not really her life. It's her, but it's not her life.
Okay. That's true. I don't know why I glazed over that. I remember that point when I read it and I thought the same thing, but I'm glad that that was tied up as well, because I remember thinking, like, when we first started getting into these timelines, it was like, I understood it as like a narrative tool, but I'm like, I'm irritated that she just jumps in and she, like, she never knows who she's talking to. She
that
never
knows where stressed she's at. Me out. I'm like, her confidence to just jump in on a life and fake it till you make it. Yes. Like, one of them, she jumps in, she's on a stage in front of thousands of people in Sao Paulo performing.
Yes. There's another,
she's full on married or she's dating. And I'm like, you have... That stressed me out.
Yeah.
Like, the one where she gave a speech.
Yeah.
Like, 10,000
Oh my gosh.
People.
Or like the one where she's about to confront her, the woman that her husband's having an affair with, but she doesn't know it.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is literally peak stress.
Yeah.
But in what you just said, it comes around again, great writing, because it makes sense. Like, that wasn't supposed to be good because she wasn't supposed to be doing that. That was the lesson. I'm like, this is good stuff here.
And she did say that the longer she stayed there, the more she started to remember certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I think she stayed in the life with Mosh and Allie, with Molly and Ash the longest. And she said stuff started coming to her, like memories that she knew she wasn't really there, but somehow she just like knew them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, if she did try to like fully assimilate into this life, would they have come back to her? But it's just not the same,
yeah.
You know, like, it's just not the same.
Right.
And I'm glad she didn't stay.
Yeah. I have a question for you. What was the most interesting timeline for you? Or like, what's one that stood out to you?
Stood out to me. I would say, this is surprising for me, I don't think this would have been my answer, but the one where she was a glaciologist?
Not as being the same person.
yeah, it just
the climate
was,
change with
Hugo. Yeah, when the polar bear,
yes,
yeah. That was just really, really interesting because I feel like she learned a lot about herself in that mm-hmm. moment. And that was the first time where she was like, she was scared to die.
Yes.
And I feel like there was a big shift in her character in mm-hmm. that moment. And I don't know. It was just interesting. It was different. I've never, and like speaking in the broader sense of like books I've read, I've never seen a character go through that and like be a glaciologist and, you know, be fighting polar bears. But
I don't know. I was taken aback because it was a major shift, because at this point we're just in like domestic settings for the most part, family and like her career.
Yeah,
and
like stuff. What if I had married him, or what if I, yeah.
Yeah, and then she's just like, what if I was away, completely withdrawn from civilization? I was like, whoa. And then we're in, I think it was like, I'm blanking on where.
Norway?
It was somewhere. That's not important. but yeah, that part was so interesting to me. And you're right, it was significant, because she realizes as she's about to be chomped down by a polar bear.
Terrifying.
And also that was really tense. I think she couldn't get the flare to shoot or something. And she
the
didn't
gun
even
was
know.
Too far away. And
because of course she wakes up in this timeline and she agrees to be a spotter, doesn't know what that is, finds out that she's supposed to be like, hey.
On guard for the polar bears.
Yeah, that timeline was so interesting to me. And then, I don't know, the role of Hugo, mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's
I don't
interesting.
Know.
Yeah. I feel like every book of this genre, because this is not, I guess we'd call it, what, sci-fi fantasy?
Yeah.
I think is what it's technically labeled as. I feel like any book, movie, film, show, whatever, of this genre, you have a character like Hugo. Mm-hmm. There's someone there to kind of explain everything who's also gone through it. Like, this just feels like a pretty... So it's interesting.
Consistent with the genre?
Yeah. And so it's like their relationship, the short-lived, whatever you want to call it, friendship relationship was...
situationship.
Situationship. That's hilarious. Situationship, was kind of like whatever to me. Like, I don't know. I found it kind of peculiar how fast it accelerated.
I know.
They didn't seem to have any chemistry, really.
Yeah.
But he was interesting just hearing him describe how many lives he's been in and how long this can go on. And... for Hugo, I think he said he's meant to live this way forever. To be a slider, I believe is what he called
them. Yeah, so he introduces that term slider. Although I was like a little bummed that it didn't return.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Hugo, I didn't really detect any chemistry. So I was like, okay, things are popping off. Didn't see that coming. That's kind of left field. But what I did, this is so random, but like with Hugo, so with Nora, she has this massive library. These books contain different timelines that she can jump into and live these lives. For Hugo, he was in, I was picturing like Blockbuster.
Yeah.
for those who weren't.
You stayed the spot.
Yeah. I'm showing my age by saying Blockbuster. So he has like this video store, and like, I love that. And then the VHS tapes.
I know, because when he said video store, the first thing I thought of was DVDs.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. I think that's just because it's the most recent.
Mm-hmm.
But then he was like, oh, the VHS tape. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was like cool. And then there is even this like mention of the Lumiere brothers. And there's some like movie references going on that my brain is blanking on at the moment. I'll probably look this up after that episode, actually. Or after this episode, actually. But, Hugo was cool. You're right. The more of that, as we're talking about it, he was like true to the convention of the genre. Mm-hmm. It was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I think what I liked about that time period was it was the first time that Nora, to me, realized that an important part of her happiness in life was contributing to the greater good, so to speak. Like, to her, doing something to help other people was like an integral part of her happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that was the first time she kind of realized that, because I think that was something she really enjoyed about like the work that they were doing. And then even when she got back to her root life, she made sure to I think she said she was starting to donate to them and like follow their research. Oh, and she was like spreading information about what they were doing, like doing her part without, she wasn't physically there, but just doing her part because it was important to her. I just thought that was cool.
This concept of timelines was fascinating. And with that, I want to ask you, what was your take on, so her best friend, or like estranged friend, Izzy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how did you feel about that?
Well, okay, I'm rewatching Grey's Anatomy right now, so every time they said Izzy, I'm thinking like Katherine Heigl, Grey's Izzy, and so I had to get my mind out of that. I was a little confused about Izzy because I couldn't tell why they weren't friends.
Right.
It seemed like one of those things where there really wasn't a reason, I guess. Like, I guess just time and distance and adulting, like, you kind of just lose touch with people. I kind of wish that in one of her lives that she went to, we actually got to see her interact with Izzy.
Yes.
That would have been cool. Because, like, a lot of what we know about their friendship is what Nora told us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that would have been nice to have a scenario where we actually see Izzy as more than, like, just somebody texting her or someone she's thinking about.
Yeah. I felt the same way. Like, I kept thinking that, again, like, we would see Izzy in another timeline or, like, this was going to go somewhere. And I thought that something, like, major happened that would explain, like, their distance, but I think that could have been the whole thing. It's just like you said, as you know, we grow up as adults, you know, you just naturally drift away and separate. And so I get that, but then it was just like Izzy seemed to be integral to, like, I don't know, to her life,
to her happiness. Yeah. It was like there was a few things that she checked for in each life,
right?
And it was, what's my relationship with my brother? Where are my parents? Where's Izzy?
Yes.
Those were, like, seemed to be the three most important things to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Izzy to be that important of a person, it would have been nice to see their relationship.
Exactly. I'm back on track. Yeah. I was just really curious. I kind of wish I knew more about that, but I can see that. It was always the text, though. One thing about Izzy, she's got to be texting about those whales.
Those humpback whales. Yes, she will. And actually, I'm looking at my notes. I was just reminded of something we were talking about. Nora was, for me, that she was so disappointed in herself and, like, all of her what ifs, and she was full of regrets.
Mm-hmm.
To me, to the point where she romanticized her what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was absolutely convinced that had she made any other choice differently, her life would be infinitely better. And I know we kind of touched on that in the beginning, but that was just something that I had written down that I thought of. Like, she just really, I guess just couldn't see past.
Well, to that point, I think that also speaks to Mrs. Elm picks up on that energy, and she says, because she keeps saying, I want this, I want that. And I'm going to butcher this. But essentially what I got from it, the point was her saying the word want really highlights that there's a lack.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was trying to get her to shift that thinking. And basically, so like she didn't want to die per se, as far as Mrs. Elm saw it. She just was lacking things that made her want to live
or to feel alive.
Yeah.
And then to me, it also kind of seemed like a little bit of confirmation bias, wherein she had a bunch of difficult things she was going through. And so she was like, anytime something difficult happened, it just kind of added on to that, which I feel like can happen. Like, you know, if you're going through a hard time and you have a bunch of things, and then every other bad thing just feels like, oh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was in the thick of it so much that she couldn't see any good things.
Ooh.
Which is that Izzy was alive, her brother was alive, she had opportunity, like she could have, which is what she ends up doing in the end of the book, of putting up posters to become a piano instructor. Like, you know, she lost her job and it became, of course I lost my job because I'm a failure and I'm a this, instead of her perspective at the end of the book is, okay, now I have this free time in my life, I'm gonna be a piano instructor, maybe I'll save up for my master's, maybe I'll do this, you know, like it's just a complete shift in her thinking.
That just reminded me, have you seen the movie Soul?
I haven't, and I'm so mad at myself that I haven't. I actually really want to watch it, and I might this weekend, because there's no good reason. There's no good reason.
Okay, well then lips are sealed. But I'll just, just when you said piano instructor, I feel like the movie Soul definitely also plays into this, like, world of choices and ideas, but I won't say anything more about it till you watch it. I don't know. Like, she definitely does romanticize what could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone is guilty of doing that to an extent. And so, like, for me, to this day, I would always think, like, it'd be my last year in college. I'm like, but what if I was this major? But how do I know that being this major? Am I in the wrong career path? Am I, you know?
And I get, like, paralyzed by indecision sometimes. Because I'm like, well, what if I do this? And what if I do this? And then there comes a point where you just have to make a decision and go. And, like, that's that. Because, like, otherwise you'll never do anything, which is the situation I find myself in a lot of, like, well, should I do this? Should I do that? And then, you just get stuck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I will say it's fascinating to just play into this world. This idea that in another realm, in another I don't know, galaxy timeline for my life, I was a musician. I was, you know, a drummer in a band. Like, that's interesting to think about. But you're right. Like, you just got to, after a point, you can only do that for so long. Yeah. And I mean, sometimes I'm like, I spend so much time just, yeah, paralyzed with, you know, wondering what could be that I don't get anything done. And yeah, then it's just
exactly.
Like,
stress. Or I'm using up the time that I have that I could be doing something else.
Exactly.
And like, I think I've talked about this in another episode, but always that feeling of like, oh, I should have done this, or should I do this because it's going to take a long time, or whatever it may be. But it's like, I always say that quote that's like, do it because time's going to pass anyway. Mm. So like, I've wasted so much time wondering if I should do things, planning if I should do something, weighing the decision. And it's like, and all that time I spent planning it, I could have just done it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would have had my answer, you know? It's just, yeah, it's difficult. And I feel like he brought that to life in a character. Yes. I feel like that's something we've all experienced at one time or another.
Definitely. I do want to touch on Mrs. Elm really quickly, but I'm laughing because for those of you who've heard our first episode for this season, The Queen's Gambit, we were talking about in that episode, because like Mrs. Elm, the character in this book, her whole thing is chess. And every
people really love chess. That's crazy.
I'm like, what rock was I living in? Because I didn't know. And not only do like people love chess, but they're really out here referencing like these moves and plays and allegories and I'm not following.
I don't, like, I know I said this in the Queen's Gambit episode, like, I know how to play, I do not care for it. It's just not my cup of tea. And to people who love it, more power to you. I think you're brilliant, because chess is not an easy game. I mean, it's easy to learn, but it's not necessarily easy to play because there's so much strategy. And I just get bored. Like, I just don't want to think 12 moves ahead and I get bored. But yeah, so.
Yeah, different strokes for different folks. I guess, I don't know. I'm pretty sure in that episode I said I was going to learn how to play. Have I? I have not. but I will say that, like, there is a few. Fortunately, this book didn't really go too ham with, like, the chess jargon. But there were, like, some passages or, like, a paragraph, I'd say, where I'm like, I'm actually lost. Like, so pawn and king's bishop and so, okay. So, yeah. But Mrs. Elm was great. Yeah, it's interesting too how like this book touches on, there's some people in your life who for them, they might not even realize how impactful you were. But like for Nora, maybe she didn't even realize it, but like Mrs. Elm was there for her when her father passed away. And so like years later, as an adult, you know, dealing with what she's dealing with, it's Mrs. Elm
this
that her brain
conjures up.
Yeah. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, Mrs. Elm, and I like that Nora found a way to connect with her at the end again.
Yeah.
Like, in her root life, in her real life. Because, yeah, I think that's a really good point that you make of sometime, like, hindsight's 2020, and had Nora not gone through what she went through, she probably wouldn't even have realized this in herself. But, like, the role that people can play in your lives without you even realizing it. And I think, like, you're right that Mrs. Elm was one of the few people who was genuinely there for Nora at all. I mean, she talks about how her mom was very nitpicky of her and kind of put her down and made her feel bad, and so they never really had a relationship. And then her dad wanted her to be a very specific type of person, and if she wasn't, then he didn't really want to give her any affection. Like, and then her brother, she felt like she was in his shadow, so like, she didn't really have anyone except for Mrs. Elm.
And
it was just like a nice full circle moment for her to kind of go find her at the end of the book again after all this time has passed.
Yeah, that's true. I have it bookmarked somewhere, but there's like a page. Also, I have to say this, I was living for I don't know. I say this every episode, like, we know, we get it, but these really quick chapters, because this book really, like,
yeah, it did. They're like 4-page chapters sometimes. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that was really interesting. But there's this one chapter that was literally just like 3/4 of a page, and in that chapter she literally said, my self-esteem is damaged because of my relationship with my parents, because of how they perceived me and themselves. I don't know how to, like, you know, deal with myself, basically. And it's tough. So, like, having Mrs. Elm, and I think, I don't know if it was in her root life or one of, because there was one, like, alternate life where Mrs. Elm passed away, but at one point she says to her, like, now it's all the lives are blending together. Another point,
when you asked me which one was your favorite, I was like, hold on. We have the life at the winery and the,
In a nutshell, yeah, she was a significant person. And then same thing even with Hugo. I forget who he mentions, but it, like, he had somebody.
Oh, his uncle, I believe.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. So that was interesting. Let's talk about, I want to ask you a little bit about her relationship with her brother.
Yeah, I kind of, same thing with Izzy. When I first started the book, I was trying to understand why their relationship was so fractured in her root life. Because again, there didn't really seem to be a reason. And then at the end, he said, you know, I was kind of going through my own things, which is also another great point, is like, we, it's very easy to feel like you're alone in things and like you're the only person in the entire world who's feeling these things, when her brother was going through the exact same thing, maybe not as severe as she was, but to a degree he was struggling in a very similar way to her, but neither of them knew. And it's like, if either had reached out to the other and could have been a support system of like, I understand what you're going through, and having someone tell you they understand what you're going through is incredibly validating for starters. And it just puts things in perspective. There's that word again, perspective. Because you okay, they've gotten through it, I can get through it. Or they know how I'm feeling and they can help me through it. Like, just to have someone who you know is going through something you've been through. And so I'm glad that she found, like, again, with the end, they wrapped up a lot of things really well. And I'm glad that they found that in each other. But their relationship seemed really complex.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting because back to my original point about her brother was, in her mind growing up, her brother was like the golden child. She felt like her parents supported him more than her. She felt like an afterthought. And then Joe tells her that growing up, he felt like she was amazing and he was in her shadow because she was so talented at so many things, and he had to hide his sexuality from his parents and that he couldn't be himself. And so they have such different perceptions of the exact same childhood.
Yeah, Joe, it was a complicated relationship. And just like you said, like, she has this idea of him, and even from like what she's hearing from bandmates and stuff, like, and some of the realities, he was painted out to be like this selfish person. He was dealing with alcohol addiction a lot and some of the timelines. But it's just like, you guys also went through a lot of the same grief, you know, losing both of your parents, dealing with the pressure your parents placed on both of you guys when they were alive. You know, she kind of was in her head a little bit, just thinking to herself, and it's not, I don't know, you know, we really don't know like the full nature and extent of their relationship, but it was really nice to have that moment at the end where they could have that dialogue. And it's just interesting because we know as the reader that the reason why she has the confidence to do this is because she's been through it, you know, she's been through all these timelines. She's literally, it was almost chomped by a polar bear. And so she's like, you know, you gotta basically, it's, you know, we've heard the saying, tell the people you love them while they're alive. Like, that whole thing was really driven because, yeah, like, they had that conversation. He was just like, where is this coming from? But I mean, while we're having it, this is what was going on. And they just had that understanding. And it's like, this could have happened, you know,
years ago.
Exactly.
And that point that you make, I don't think she herself realized how important her brother was to her until she got to that timeline where he had died.
Oh, yeah.
And she talks about, like, how strong and raw that grief was. Like, I don't think she even fully realized how much she needed him and missed him until she thought he wasn't there anymore.
Yeah. And she even is able to recall in another universe that memory of when they were, I think, high schoolers at a party, and she jumped in a lake and they were both drunk and he was about to go in and save her, but her friend's like, no, let her, and she ends up swimming across to the other side. But she was like, he was ready to, like, he's a ride or die. Like,
yeah, that's like, my brother. And for her to, I guess, because I don't think she knew until that moment that he had planned to jump in after her.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It was, again, like what we're talking about, I believe at the beginning of the episode, like this idea that she has this network around her, but she, and it happens, like, for whatever reason, just life. And actually, the reason is, I mean, losing her job, like, she's keeps getting hit with, like,
knocked down again.
Yeah. And so that, like, blinded and kind of clouded her judgment, and she just stopped, I guess, seeing, you know, what was around her.
Yes. And to that point, you were saying, like, the last thing that she said was, when she, the last message she sent to her brother before she went to the Midnight Library was, you'll be better without me or something like that. Maybe she thought it, but I thought it was in that message. And at the end, he tells her, like, you are all I have left.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's like, I can't deal with losing you, like, in this life. And but in her mind, she had convinced herself that he didn't miss her, he didn't want her, he didn't need her. And in reality, it was his own struggle that he was going through that kept him from reaching out.
Yeah. And to that point, you know, she sends this message before she attempts to take her life. And the end, once she is, you know, hospitalized, she learns, or we find out her brother immediately, like, tried to call her, rushes over. He's like, absolutely, like, you can't go through with this. And, like, that's pretty significant because, you know, we can intuit that she was feeling like they were disconnected. They didn't really talk a lot. But he's just like, you know, no, like, I don't approve of this. I don't agree with this. And like you said, you know, they both need each other. Like, yeah, they've both gone through some awful, terrible things. And so, yeah, I'm so glad that this book focuses on all the other, I mean, of course, romantic love is an important part to our lives and everyone's lives, but books, and not just books, shows, songs, just popular culture, it's always like the solution, the one thing, but it's like, our lives are, like, rich, and they're full of all kinds of things. There's, you know, neighborly love. Like, there's all kinds of things, educational,
friendship figures, love, and yeah,
friendship,
and like,
love.
And I don't know. I think it's really weird that we kind of expect one person to be everything for us. It's unrealistic. Like, there's things that my friends provide me with that I wouldn't necessarily want from my, not even say want, but that I don't expect from my boyfriend, or I don't, I want from him. Yeah, I'll say I don't want. Like, I want certain things from my best friend.
Exactly.
We have a different relationship, and he is my best friend too, but it's just, it's different.
Yeah.
There's things I get from, you know, him or my best friend or my mom or whoever. Like, people provide different things for you. And I think that that's okay. And it's weird to expect only one person to be the be-all, end-all for everything that you're feeling at any given moment.
Yeah. Like, books love to slap that on like a band-aid.
So, I guess just moving into our final thoughts, I guess we'll ask our question we always ask. Would you recommend this book?
I definitely would, but I would say just, you know, the trigger warning thing, just make sure that, like, you're in the right headspace. And honestly, the bulk of the book isn't even, like, that heavy, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's really just initially once you realize what's going on in Nora's life, that's, it's harrowing, you know? And also just in terms of grief, just, like, check in with yourself first, but I would say I really thoroughly enjoyed this book, and I would actually read it again, and I rarely read books again.
I'm impressed.
So, because, yeah, just, like, the writing, there's a lot of good, like, one-liners or things a character says, or we were talking about this off air, but just, like, yeah, there's, I have things I just jotted down. I'm like, this is rich. This is good writing. How about you?
Yeah, I would say it was definitely enjoyable. It was an interesting concept. Like I said, I'm always fascinated with, like, alternate timeline type concepts. Like, it's just, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda, what could have been. And I think Nora is a really authentic character. It's been a while since I've read a book where the character, like, I really connected with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, or just, like, felt for them as a person instead of just, like, something I'm reading.
Yeah.
And so I felt Nora felt real. I could picture her. I could imagine her. I hurt for her when she was hurt, and so I think I would recommend, like, what you were saying, know what you're getting into with this book. I think that's important, but I enjoyed it, and I actually want to read other books by Matt Haig. I'm really curious.
Yeah, for sure. This book was really interesting. I felt like I've been kind of in a genre bubble these last few months, so this was a nice way to shake things up, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so don't forget to check out our next episode, which will be a week from today, actually. We're covering Somewhere in the Dark by RJ Jacobs. I'm really excited to get into that.
Yes.
And don't forget to, if you're on Apple Podcasts, give us a like, rating, and review. Check out all of our other videos. I think this is our 21st episode. Yeah, yes. So we have 20 other episodes. Get familiar. Take a look around, you know?
Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us today. If you like what you heard and want to stay in the loop, be sure to follow our Instagram and like our Facebook at Book Solid Podcast. You can also check out our Discord server, where you can leave suggestions, engage in discussions, and take a deeper dive into our episodes. We'll have the links to all of our social media accounts in our episode show notes.